and everything in between. So we're going to try to engage in some ways that we've done in the past that really help people to get ready and prepare for it. Is this on?
Yeah,
great. Okay. Bismillah. Bismillah walhamdulillah. Wassalatu wassalam ala rasulillah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. So what we're going to go through between now and March 10th, which is going to be the first night of Ramadan, in the Islamic calendar, which is a lunar calendar, in relation to the Gregorian calendar, which is the calendar that we kind of go by day to day here, the months comparatively start about 11 days earlier every year. So this year, March 10th will be the first night of Ramadan, and the months are structured also in a way in our calendar where the night precedes the day. So night one precedes day one, and night two precedes day two. Does that make sense? So today is January 29th. So we essentially have about 5 weeks, give or take, a little bit more, until Ramadan comes. And what we want to be able to do is be ready for it. And the anticipation of being ready for it is within the recognition of it's a very just unique time of the year. The more difficult kind of preparations come, not necessarily for people who have never done it before, but more so for people who have done it for a long period of time and are in a place where year to year, it now somehow doesn't have the potential impact that it could have because our preparation for it isn't necessarily what it could be. We're going to go through the do's and don'ts of Ramadan, you know, what's called the fiqh, the legalistic aspects of it, you know, what breaks a fast, what does the fast entail, its start time, its stop time, but with a little bit more detail than just a list of do's and don'ts so people can extrapolate and try to understand like why we would do that. So for example, like a good number of you know how to pray as Muslims, right? A lot of us just prayed. And many of you know how to then wash up for prayer. If you can understand fiqh in detail, not in a way that's complicated, but just knowing like what are the obligatory aspects of something, the recommended aspects of something, you know, the extra things that you could do, what are prohibited, it allows for you to be able to navigate situations a little different. Do you know? Someone's so excited about the fiqh of Ramadan. Look at that. Did you just woo that loud?
No.
It was you. Why are you lying? It was you. It was him? Did she? It was her, right?
Uh-oh.
All right, we heard her. Don't worry. We know it was you. Yeah. So, you know, example I like to use, like when you wash up for prayer, typically what most of us do, we wash our hands, we rinse out our mouth, our nose, we wash our face, both arms, head, neck, etc., and then feet. The order we follow is that one. We do each thing three times other than the head, right? Does it sound familiar? Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Well, yeah, great. There's seven types of water you can make wudu with. And like rainwater you can make wudu with, for example. So some of you have seen our brothers and sisters in Gaza making wudu with the rain, you know? Allah grant them ease and end the occupation that's taking place there. So you can also make wudu with snow. I had students who were sledding in Central Park, and Maghrib, which is our fourth prayer of the day, that has a very short window of time, right? It's at sunset. It's the one we pray right before the one we just prayed. They're in Central Park sledding in the snow, and the time for Maghrib is finishing, and they got to make wudu. And they said, can we use the snow to make wudu? The answer is yes, you can, right? But if you don't know what the actual obligatory parts of wudu are and the recommended parts of wudu, etc., making wudu with the snow can be very painful. You know what I mean? So rinsing your mouth and your nose, these are sunnah parts of wudu. They're not from the fara'id. The number of times and the order also are not obligations. Why is that important? If I wanted to mess with these kids, I'd be like, yeah, gargle with the snow. Like, shove it up your nostrils, right? But what are they going to do? And then they take the snow. Are they going to rub it on their face multiple times? Do you know what I mean? They get sick. It makes no sense. If they don't know what they have capacity to know, that's going to be a hard situation. And then some of them will make a difficult decision that they shouldn't be making. Maybe I'll just pray when I get home. Or this is too tough. But you're making it tougher because the do's and don'ts, you haven't learned systematically. And somebody else has taught it to you in a way that is important, because everybody has to be able to access everything. The guy who drives his cab 16 hours a day into the late hour of the night, he just needs to know the how-tos so he can put food on the table for his kids. Do you know what I mean? But many of you in this room have more time to be able to understand it a little bit differently. So the do's and the don'ts don't become kind of confining or anxiety-inducing, but it actually then becomes a spiritual exercise. That when you follow the mechanics, you can recognize that these are time-tested processes through which one can illuminate their inside, render more consciousness and awareness, and it's a means to something, not an ends, right? What does reading the Quran in Ramadan bring you to? What does fasting in Ramadan bring you to? What do extra night prayers in Ramadan bring you to, right? So we're going to have some that's the do's and the don'ts, but with a little bit more of a nuanced explanation. Does that make sense? We're going to talk about other things that become relevant. How do you function within the routine or a schedule of Ramadan that has you, because the night precedes the day, where we engage on the first night of Ramadan, which is March 10th in the evening. I hope these work.
Work?
Yeah. So March 10th at night, which is a Sunday, we're going to start what's called our first Tarawih prayer. This is a recommended prayer. It's not obligatory. Then when you go from here, Tarawih is a unique prayer in the month of Ramadan. We're going to talk about it in more detail. The next Ramadan thing that happens is your Suhoor. This is the pre-Fajr, or rather pre-dawn meal that's recommended to be taken. Then you have Fajr. Then in here, if you pray a Ishraq, you have that. This is like an extra optional prayer. We'll talk about it. Don't worry if you don't know what it is. You have Dhuhr prayers, Asr prayer, Maghrib, Isha, and then you start again after Isha, the Tarawih, and it just loops. So in the midst of this, when do I work? When do I study? When do I sleep? What do I eat? When do I socialize? When do I exercise? We're going to talk about all of these things, right? Because a lot of this is going to be about utilizing the opportunity to gain in a sense of self. And a big part of self-management is time management, to not get to a place where we just have it be very routine and mechanical. The physicality of it, you'll get used to after a little bit of time. We'll talk about what do you do if you can't fast, right? Because a lot of people can't fast. We have people in our community who are diabetic, people who have wellness conditions and necessitate medication, people who are nursing, people who are pregnant, you know, all kinds of situations, right? What can we do in Ramadan in that sense? We're going to talk about habits, which is a really important thing that you can cultivate a deeper sense of positive habit transformation, why we do the things that we do and the ways that we do them. And why we're going to talk about that is because the verse in the Quran that is about fasting, it says, Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, that, O people of faith. This is a construct in the Quran that when it prefaces a verse, it's usually going to talk about something legalistic or ritualistic, and it's pertinent now to people who practice Islam. Kutiba alaykum al-siyam, fasting has been written for you. This word kutiba alaykum al-siyam, when it says this, written for you, it's also a way when people draw meaning from the text that that wording indicates that this is an obligation. So kutiba alaykum al-siyam, siyam is the word for fasting in Arabic. So fasting has been written for you. Kama kutiba ala alladhina min qablikum, as it was written for those who came before you. La'allakum, so that potentially, tattakun, you might obtain this thing of taqwa, which is consciousness, awareness, wakefulness, right? We have ideas of repentance in our tradition as a spiritual act. So if we conceptualize tawbah, which is spiritual repentance, as the vehicle that gets you out of the hole when you fell in the hole, does it make sense? Like, I slipped and fell. Repentance in our tradition is not an act of like remorseful guilt that's unhealthy, but it's I'm going back to God. That no matter what I do, I can always go back to God. So that's the vehicle that gets you out of the hole when you fall in the hole. Taqwa, which is what you potentially get from fasting, that's the thing inside of you that tells you the hole is coming. Don't fall into it. That's like the consciousness. Do you get what I mean? Hey, you're about to be racist. Hey, you're about to lie. Hey, you're about to gossip. So that wakefulness, that consciousness. Why we talk about habits is because habits are not consciously performed, but they can be consciously broken down and consciously like formulated, right? And Ramadan's a great time to do this because the Quran also, when it defines within its pages, like what it is, ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابُ لَا رَيْبَ فِيهِ هُدًى لِلْمُتَّقِينَ. This is a book, in it there is no doubt, a guidance for people of taqwa, consciousness, wakefulness, awareness. We're going to talk about forgiveness and mercy, because that's what this month is a lot about also. But in the prisms of how to seek, how to give, both to others, as well as how do I forgive myself? Because what we're taught is that sometimes the punishment for the sin is the sin in and of itself, because you know everything that you've done and you carry that with you, and that can be really heavy, especially if you never thought about who God is to you. And so in our preparation, we're going to also talk about who is God to us. How do we understand the role of the divine in our lives? Because we're not engaged in ritual, just again, in pursuit of something that has no objective or gain. But these are all mechanisms that are meant to draw us closer to the divine. Does that make sense? So what I'd like for you all to do, just so we get to know who we're spending the next 5-6 weeks with, in preparation of what is a really beautiful month, right? The month of Ramadan. If you turn to the persons next to you, what's bringing you here today? What are you hoping to get from this? How are you feeling about the coming month of Ramadan? Like, are you excited? Are you anxious? Do you have any thoughts about it? Do you know what I mean? The space in and of itself is going to be one where we're going to have to abide by certain things, because the room has people who have fasted for a while. I'm 41 years old. Right? I don't know if I look 41. I don't know if I look 51. I get different answers from different people. Some kids in this school, when they move in, I live in a NYU building. Some of you have been in my building. You know, and then they see I have like children with me. And they're like, you know, excited, semester started, whatever. And then I have an 8-year-old, an 11-year-old. And he's like, who are these people? And he's like, these are my kids. And they're like, you live here with your kids? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, you have kids? And I'm like, yeah, I do. And I have to explain to them, I'm not a sophomore like you. I am a grown man, and this is my family, you know? But they just can't comprehend for a little bit of time, right? So you know, I started fasting consistently when I was probably like 11 years old. My daughter's 11. She's been fasting on her own volition for like a couple of years. My son is 8. He tries to do it sometimes. Last year, he did more than the year before. We don't force him, right? Like, children are still developing, and it's not something you should like compel or force a child to do. In our tradition, there's like a rich, like, depth written about things in the prism of reality. Some people would say it's a form of abuse to force a child to fast at a young age when it's not in their capacity to do it, you know? And these are like fuqaha, like people who engage in just extrapolating legal rulings. Do you know what I mean? Because it's not obligatory to you to fast until you're post-pubescent. That's when you're considered to be what's called mukallif in our tradition. Like, you're accountable. Do you know? And so here, we want to recognize that. Like, I've been fasting and experiencing Ramadan in that mode for more than 30 years. And there's some people in this room who they're still trying to decide whether Islam makes sense for them or not. You know, they come from different walks of life. There's some people who will come in and out. Literally, we had 4 people take their shahada this week in our community. You know, this young man came to my apartment yesterday. There's 2 people who came to Jummah. There was somebody on Wednesday last week, right? They've been Muslim for 10 minutes, you know? So where and how we can learn and have something to learn from even those people and all of us is when we're going to be comfortable talking to each other and discussing with one another. Because Ramadan is about kind of wakefulness and consciousness, not being kind of entrenched or stuck in just our feelings and experiences in a way that is overbearing, but learning through them and understanding them. And so if I see something in a certain way that, you know, you can see a little bit differently, me hearing from you will help me to see it, right? Like, you see this and I see it, but none of us sees it the same way. And all of you seated here all see it differently from everyone else. But it's not seen through a prism of better or worse. It's just different vantage points. And it can be seen on 360 degrees of perspective on an infinite number of planes. Do you know? And so we will benefit and broaden in our vantage points by being able to hear from one another and understand from one another. So why is that important? You come with a notebook so you reflect and write things down. Maybe from next week, we'll face the class that way so I can use the PowerPoint and have things a little bit like more prepped and can flow a little bit better. And then engage in like the exercises, do you know? There's a reason why thousands of self-help books are written every single year and they sell millions of copies, because there's only dozens of people who act upon the content of what's written in the book. Do you know what I mean? So if you don't do something with it, then it can't do anything for you, right? And what's the point of knowing something and then not acting on what you know, especially if it's something that's beneficial? Like, if you know something stupid, then don't be stupid. Do you know what I mean? That's not what the goal is, right? But if you know something is good, why would you not do it? So if you were here at Maghrib time and I was telling everybody who's praying, why would you not fast right now if you can fast? Why would you wait for the first day of Ramadan to figure out like how tiresome it is to fast for the first time if you haven't fasted for a year ever in your life? Why would you wait to have like when it's like go time be the time that you're trying to learn about yourself in relation to the physicality of it? And I'm going to say it because I love you. Unless you have a physical health condition or like something that really prevents you, you're traveling, running around, you know, flying around the world, etc., right? It doesn't make any sense. There's nothing that prevents you or tells you it's wrong to fast before Ramadan starts. If anything, it's recommended and praiseworthy. So that's where you have to bring thoughtfulness to it. Why would you not be doing it? And the fact that it's hard, it's all the more reason to start doing it now gradually so you become accustomed to it. Because what's crazy is like when this happens,
is also right when daylight savings times happens, right? So you're going to go from like Maghrib being at 6 p.m. March 9th or whatever, and then it's going to be at 7 p.m. the first day you're fasting. So you got an extra hour, and you haven't, you know, Fajr is then an hour later too, alhamdulillah, because then you can eat a little bit early, like later into the day. Instead of getting up at like 3 in the morning, now you have another hour to get up. Do you know? So it works on both ends of it. But why would you wait to see how your body responds, your mind responds, like your being responds to it? Do you know? Does that make sense? And this is where, whether you're a convert or you're born into Islam, your Islam is your own. So regardless of what somebody gave to you growing up, if in your home you fasted during Ramadan, that's amazing. Or if your friends or people who taught you about it in Ramadan, that's great. But you want to be able to know about you and then also think where and how you're getting ready for what it is. And this is going to be a big part of it. Similar to like sleep schedules, yahamakullah, like coffee detoxes. I don't know how many of you drink coffee a lot, right? You drink a lot of coffee? No, man, you're like 10 years old, bro.
No.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't drink coffee.
He doesn't drink coffee?
I don't drink coffee.
Good for you. You drink a lot of coffee?
All the time. I drink Red Bull.
Red Bull? See, it works. Yeah. So think about this. You know, I miss when I was 12 years old. And I stopped drinking caffeine when I was 12. Because when I was training to be an athlete, I got injured in my senior year, so I couldn't play sports in college anymore. This is, you know, hard, but alhamdulillah, I probably wouldn't have been Muslim if I went down that route instead. But I cut it out when I was 12. And I remember when I was like 10 and 11 or 12 or a teenager, I could be drinking Coke for breakfast. It didn't make a difference. If I did that now, I would have this like massive spike and then just crash heavy and life would be miserable. But yeah, welcome to getting older. So, an understanding for yourself, like, why would you wait till that first day, you know, to then have the added headaches that can only be experienced at that time? Reorienting a sleep schedule, an eating schedule, right? Build a relationship with consuming water now. Think about things that you're going to be doing. Do you know what I mean? We're going to talk about all of this, but you have to make a firm commitment to say, how do I act upon what I know? I don't want to spend like Ramadan just being hangry the whole time. Do you know what I mean? And what the first 10 days brings to me, that's going to be something that I have to be conscious of. I have to be aware of that I can just circumvent a lot of it by getting the physicality out of the way at this moment. And then you build community, right? All of this stuff doesn't mean you have to do it alone. But on a weekend, you grab a buddy that you meet here and say, hey, like, you want to break fast with me this weekend? You want to come over my place and we'll have like a meal together before Fajr? Do you know what I mean? You're building like relationships with people. You're building like friendships with people, you know, and that's a beautiful bond to have. It's not based off of like gossip. It's not based off of like shared class or shared race alone or any of these things. It's based off of like a practice that's the person that I break fast with. Do you know what I mean? That's the person that kind of helps me get centered in these ways. Does that make sense? We'll talk about different things from a spiritual standpoint. You know, how do we understand like the relationship of metaphysical elements that get in the way when there's limited amounts of time? Like some of you went on Umrah with us a couple of weeks ago, pilgrimage to Mecca. And I said to people leading into it, one of the things that's going to happen is shaitan, the devil, is going to get you where you're most vulnerable leading into it, and then also when you come back, right? Ramadan's the same way, because in our tradition, we're taught that when Ramadan comes, the prophetic hadith that says, "Futihat abwab al-jannah," that the gates of heaven are open, "Waghuligat abwab al-nar," and the gates of hell are closed, "Wasufidat al-shayateen," and the shayateen, the devils, they're chained. So they have no exertion over you the ways they do at other times of year. So we're going to talk about what are like adversaries that also on a spiritual level will keep us from kind of our growth and a bunch of other things. over the course of the next 5 or 6 weeks. So bring a notebook and be ready to talk. So what I'd like for us to do is, if you turn to the persons next to you, what's like bringing you to this space? How are you feeling about Ramadan right now? What is it that you've kind of done so far? What are you hoping to get out of these conversations? And then we'll come back and discuss and move forward from there. But go ahead. And if you don't know the names of the people around you, then share some names, you know?
I'm
Okay, so let's come back. So what are some of the things that we're discussing? Who wants to start? What are we hoping to take from this? Where are we at right now in relation to the coming month of Ramadan? Yeah.
Proteins and how important your diet is.
That's right. Proteins and how important your diet is. All of you is connected to the rest of you. So we'll have some opportunity to talk about physical wellness during the course of this. There's also the relationship of the physical to the metaphysical. So when we talk about scheduling and we look at suhoor, which is the pre-dawn meal, the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, he recommends to even just have a sip of water, if you can, before the time Fajr comes in. He says there's blessing in this. There's barakah in this, right? You want to have a notebook so you can just write down terms so you know what the words mean. Barakah, blessing, more so accurately means the ability to do more with less. And when you have blessing in what you're consuming, you don't need as much to kind of, you know, get it going. But if you're eating less, you want to make sure you're eating what your body needs as fuel, right? And we'll talk about this in more detail. But leading into it, you got to start detoxing from some of the garbage you put into your bodies, do you know? And get to a place, too, where you're mindful of what you break your fast on. It's not just about the quantity, but the quality of what you're putting in. What's easier is not better, necessarily, right? And that's why we're going to talk about time management and self-management and scheduling and structuring, so that you can make conscious decisions. If I have to forego going to the masjid every night to pray tarawih, so that one of the days I am just meal prepping for the week, so that I'm not in between classes just grabbing the quickest thing, and suddenly for a month
I just ate more pizza than I ever ate in my life. Or I've eaten more chicken and rice than I've ever eaten in my life. How are you going to pray in the late hours of night? One, you're going to be farting all over the place, right? And two, that's a problem some of us already have, you know? And two, you're going to get to a place where you're going to be miserable because you're consuming what is literally just going to make you lethargic and just not present. You're going to feel gross, you know? It doesn't mean you shouldn't, like, eat things that you enjoy to eat, but both the quantity as well as the quality, do you know? And so proteins, what you're putting in your body, having a mindfulness of it, that this is fueling and nourishing me, and all of me is connected to the rest of me, you know? And our spiritual tradition has a paradox of many paradoxes. One of the spiritual paradoxes that we have is that a hard heart in our tradition is a weak heart, and a soft heart is a strong heart, right? So what's soft is strong and what's hard is weak. But from the physicality of it, if you eat foods that make your physical heart hard, it's likely going to make your spiritual being hard too, right? All kinds of stuff. My family is from Kashmir. You know, they grew up Pakistan. I don't know how many of you are Pakistani also, right? Yeah, all kinds of oils and greases in this food. Do you know what I mean? I literally went to Handi on Lexington. Has anybody ever been to Handi? Yeah? You like Handi? Yeah? Handi is one of those things that, like, it tastes great. You're going to just regret it after. You're lucky if when you go home, like, your stomach isn't destroyed at the end of it. I went to Handi, and the guy who was serving the food, you know, he, like, took a cup to remove the oil from the top of the thing, which is fine, right? Handi's good. I'm not hating on Handi. But the crazy thing wasn't that he did that. Then he drank it, you know? And I was looking at him like, man, your stomach must be like a rock, because if I did that, I'd be destroyed for the next week or two, you know? And I realized, like, I'm from the United States. I was born in New Jersey. My wife, she was born in Chennai in South India, grew up in Oman. She's got like a ironclad stomach, you know? She eats like street vendor food when we're in different parts of the world. If I like take a bite of it, I'm like just destroyed, you know? But you want to be smart. This nourishes you, this consumes you. When people think about hadith that say the consumption of haram and its relation to prayers, du'as being accepted, and they're not for 40 days, it doesn't mean you stop praying. But the physicality of it, that food stays in your system longer than just when you eat it. So if you literally have haram in your body, it doesn't go away after a day. It's with you for like many days, many weeks. So you're carrying haram in you, you know? And if you're like overwhelmed with all of this, in the sense of you just eat and eat and eat, the hadith is clear. One third food, one third air, one third water means you don't eat till you're full, but you're supposed to be drinking as much water as you're eating food, right? So in these modes prior to and then at the like actual month. What else? What else did we discuss? What are you thinking? How are you approaching it right now? What brings you here? What are you hoping to get from these conversations? Yeah.
We spoke about it from the perspective of those of us who have been fasting for most of our lives and how we're trying to approach this Ramadan and differentiate between the monotonous ritualistic versus the spiritualistic, which is what we're all trying to strive for. Anyone who's fasted for as many decades as some of us have, like you said, this becomes kind of routine. It becomes something that you go through the motions without actually fully understanding why it is you're doing what you're doing, some of the barakah behind it, some of the blessings behind it. And especially, you know, we talked about what you're reading. You don't even understand what you're reading, and so the fasir behind it. So for me personally, having come back from Umrah recently and being on that spiritual high still, alhamdulillah, how I'm able to leverage that moving forward into another period of spirituality.
Amazing. And this is what we want to do. We want to tap into Ramadan in terms of like the multiple dimensions that go within Islam as a religion, right? So when you have Islam, which is the name of the religion, in case people didn't know, right? You also then have like dimensions to it. That's not only the do's and don'ts. And some of you have heard me say this. Part of the etiquette of learning in our tradition is revision. So you want to be able to apply it. How do I not have a monotonous experience? Well, the whole idea is that one, you recognize there's got to be something there that God brings us to it with regularity, right? Like you read Fatiha every day, multiple times in a day, 17 times in a day. It's got to have so much in it. I, growing up, didn't know so much about my family, and my dad reads a lot, mashallah, like extended family. And I went down to his library once when I was a little older, and he showed me a book that was just an explanation, a commentary on Surah Fatiha, the first chapter of the Quran that we read in the first like set of every cycle of our prayer, right? Seven verses. And I have an uncle who wrote seven volumes on these seven verses. Do you know? And aside from the fact, I was like, who is this uncle? Like, why don't we hang out with him, right? How does somebody extrapolate that much meaning? But the idea is that its relevance is not just in kind of its direct translation, but like meaning. What does it mean? And when I come back to it again and again, how does it inform what I'm doing in the course of my day? There's got to be a reason I keep coming back. It's not so that it just becomes flat and I become bored with things, right? And this is where reality happens, because there's hadith where the Prophet tells his companions, like, don't make the Quran boring for people. Do you know? You need to have different things you do in the course of your routine, your schedule. But the framework through which we're going to engage this is going to be around the different dimensions that exist within Islam as a religion. So we break these down into dimensions. Islam, which is the name of the religion, also gets rooted in principles of practice. And iman is faith, theology. And ihsan often gets translated as spirituality. When you think about this in a prism of multiple dimensions, another way we can categorize this, there's a narration that we looked at already in the 40 hadith class. That's the second one in the book. It's called the tradition of Gabriel, the hadith Jibrail, where he comes and he asks, what is Islam? What is iman? What is ihsan? And he says, tell me of the hour, right? So time also gets factored into this. But what essentially, you know, tell me of Islam, the Prophet says the five pillars. So the religion gives you something to do. What is iman? Like, tell me about faith. It gives you something to believe in. What is ihsan? Anta'budullaha ka'annaka tarah. You worship God as if you can see him, right? You can look up the hadith. In the interest of time, we won't delve into it too much today. But the religion gives you something to embody. And then the angel asks, like, what about the last day, the hour, right? The Prophet says the one asking knows as much as the one being asked. And he asks about signs. But it gives you something to get ready for. All of Ramadan has aspects of these four things, right? But this religion gives you something to do, something to believe in, something to embody, and something to get ready for. And now when we understand this, I know my handwriting is atrocious, sorry, from a dimensional standpoint, what most of us get is just this. And that's what we have. And it can be monotonous because fasting is a passive act. You don't do anything. You just keep yourself from doing stuff. You don't eat, you don't drink. There's no like physical intimacy, right? If you smoke, you can't smoke, like no consumptions of things, do you know? If all you have, right, the example that we use often
is one dimension of something, regardless of what you look at, it's going to look like a straight line. It's simplistic. If that's what you have of Ramadan and you don't even know why you have that, like, it's just going to look like this. This is why the world is like a very myopic, kind of reductive place. It's very racist because you can't see someone bigger than the color of their skin. It's very sexist. You can't see someone bigger than their gender, right? It's one-dimensional understanding. So we can put that at a horizontal. That's one dimension. Our religion adds a second sphere that is theology. And you go from one-dimensional understandings to two-dimensional. So the line now becomes a rectangle. It's a diamond. Does this mean more or less than this? Like if I said describe this versus this, this clearly has more opportunity to draw meaning, right? Then what happens is you get on a third dimension, what is called ihsan. And that's what adds now at a three-dimensional level, like volume. It gives you depth. This is where beauty comes in. You can see things actually having depth. Do you get what I mean? Right? We can approach our practice, our ritual, our theology, our prayer, our fasting, our Quran, with an understanding that the experience is multidimensional, has more than one facet. It's not just a list of do's and don'ts. The do's and don'ts have to bring you to something, right? So the abstainment from food enhances now not an empty stomach, but a full heart, right? It allows for you to be more present in your prayer because you're not like running on just grogginess from, man, I just downed like 3 chicken and rice bowls, right? And now I'm going to try to pray. But there's something else that's fueling me. There's consciousness that's only elicited from wakefulness that can help me think, like, what do I actually believe in? Who is the one that I'm praying to? Do you know? And then you can't deny what's experiential. Do you know what I mean? You might want to, and after Ramadan, everything's going to make you want to forget it, right? Just the same way. How many of you were in New York during COVID? Right? Didn't it suck in New York during COVID? Allah make it easy. You know, people lost loved ones. Everything was shut down. We had everything virtual, you know? You could go to the outer boroughs. There was still, like, some movement. But still, a lot of things were very virtual, right? Most people learned in COVID that they don't need a lot of stuff. You're here right now. There's a reason why Allah did not take you during COVID. There's a reason why you've lasted. You didn't last so that you would forget what you learned about yourself during COVID, that you survived without going, spending tons of money that you don't have to buy things that you don't need. Because all the stores were closed. You weren't going there. You weren't racking up large bills, eating at restaurants where people could care less about you. There's no barakah in the food because it's not made with hands that love you. It's made by hands that just see you as a dollar figure, right? What happened after COVID? Everybody forgot. You know why they forgot? Because the bombardment of marketing, media, it brings you to a place where there's no more consciousness in what you're doing. It's just the physicality. It's just the externals, one dimension. Satisfaction is not coming from the inside out. It's just about the novelty of things that I need this, I need this, I need this. You don't really need it, you just want it. And your wants sometimes conflict with your needs, you see? So how do we break the monotony of what it is that is a challenge when you have a religion that is deeply ritualistic and ritual has this danger of becoming overtly ritualized? Well, you got to realize that it's an entire system that fits in together. And you bring yourself to a place of recognizing, how do these things all come? Islam is not a religion that says religion is here and spirituality is here and faith is here and ethics is here, but it's all brought together under one banner. And the way time relates to this is time is what engulfs all of it. You don't know if you're going to make it to Ramadan. You have no idea. Do you? How would you know? Tell me honestly.
How do you have any direct idea that it's written that you will experience this Ramadan? Do you get what I'm saying? I said this to some people in the last few hours. I don't remember when. I've been talking a lot since Maghrib time. But those of you who went on Umrah with us, you know, where we landed, and I gave the example, our flight was from New York to Cairo, Cairo to Medina. I came out at the end of the group to make sure no one was like lost, straggling, whatever. And I passed a huddle of people near a chair in the airport. And then I found out when I got a little bit away from them that they were huddled around an elder woman that got on the plane at Cairo with the rest of us. And when she got out of the plane, she sat down on this chair in the airport and then she died. Her son had invited her, who lived in Medina. I found out later from still all in the airport, but just from people that I was now talking to, to find out what's going on, right? Because I'm responsible for 100 people. They came off the plane, and the first thing they saw was a woman who passed away. There's got to be a sense of recognition. Like, what am I, like, prepping my people for in just relation to this? Four doctors in our group, immediately off of a plane, from New York to Cairo to Medina, sitting in Egypt Air, which is not, like, it's miserable, right? And they've been sitting up and tired from this journey, and now they're trying to revive a woman who has passed away. The airport had no defibrillator, like no equipment whatsoever. You can imagine the toll it takes on people, right? And then they said, like, her son had gotten her this package. She was coming. He hadn't seen her in a long time. And I'm thinking, like, man, this kid's waiting outside the airport with joy, thinking his mom is coming. They're going to perform Umrah. And somebody's about to tell him that his mom just passed away. You know? It's crazy, right? That's why things can't be seen just as one-dimensional. Do you know what I mean? There's like a lot of feelings involved here, you know? That's why Ramadan is not just about empty stomachs. It's about so much more. But time becomes the variable that surrounds it because you have allocated time. You don't want to say, well, when I'm older and I'm retired, I'll do this. You want to say, I'm just going to do what I can do right now. Because I don't know if I'm going to have time to get it done any differently later. Do you know what I mean? Right? And so then it's not like, man, should I be waking up for suhoor? It's like, yeah, I got to wake up for suhoor. Because what if I don't have another suhoor? Why would I miss the opportunity of the barakah that comes just from sipping water? And then the physicality of it, you get your metabolism going in the morning. You know, everything kind of gets jump-started a little bit. There's wisdom to this, right? There's wisdom that we break our fast on dates and water because dates are like a very healthy thing to eat. But it's also going to inject some glucose into your body, and that's going to send all kinds of things that your brain needs that it hasn't had during the course of the day, right? If I know these things, and this is not my expertise, there's no reason why you shouldn't know them. And having an awareness of how all of you functions. Do you get what I mean? What are some other things that we talked about, we're taking away, we're anticipating? I promise I won't talk so much now. What else did we discuss?
Guidance. Huh? Guidance for people who are not practicing the religion and who are supporting other people in their families. I have no idea of the different aspects of it. So last year we did it, but we were kind of like, you know, all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, this is more like, oh, okay, I see why. Oh, this makes sense. Now it's more like a deep understanding.
Yeah, and that's why we want to break it down. You should bring your friends, your family members, who also are not Muslim, right? To be able to be in the space, to think out how they can better support you as well. And we'll delineate things as best as we can so that there's an understanding, you know, as to why. Because people are going to think from their own paradigms, mm-hmm. right? And our religion doesn't consider certain things the same way as other religions do. So when you talk about fasting in Islam, there's not many religions that fast the way we fast, do you know? When you talk about like a prophet, the concept and a role of a prophet differs from one religion to the next. The essential understanding of who God is differs from one religion to the next, you know? So in being able to break that down where there's more information. Other things that are bringing people here, like what are you thinking in terms of Ramadan coming up? Yeah. Yeah, and we're going to do a deep dive into that, right? Because a part of this is fundamental to one's relationship to the divine. Knowing oneself is a key variable in knowing who God is, do you know? And we are not fully aware of what makes us the way that we are. You know, why do I do some of the things that I do in the ways that I do? I used to have a doctoral candidate who worked for me at the Islamic Center. He's a brilliant psychologist. And she said that when she would make a lamb shank, right, like a leg of lamb, she noticed that like they'd always cut the leg of the lamb at like a place where there was still prime meat on it, you know? And somebody said to her, why do you do this? And she was like, I don't know. Like, why? I don't know why I do it. And so she asked her mom. She said, Mom, why do we cut the leg of the lamb where there's not just bone, but there's still meat on the leg, right? Like, if this is the leg, they're like cutting it here. And she said, I don't know. Like, we got to ask your grandmother. And so they went and asked the grandmother. And the grandmother said, when we immigrated to this country, we were very poor. And the oven we could afford was very small. So we had to cut the leg of the lamb so that it would fit in the oven. And then it just passed on for generations with that way. Do you get what I mean? The oven got bigger, but they were still cutting it down. None of them knew why they were doing what they were doing. They were just doing it, right? That's what we do a lot. We're going to dig deep into this so that you're fully present in the action. Do you know what I mean? And then when you're willfully following, which has benefit to it, you're following also consciously, not unconsciously. There's still presence in the following. Do you get what I mean? Does that make sense? Any other thoughts before we take a pause? What's bringing people? Yeah.
So retaining what you've gained through Ramadan, if you manage to get somewhere, to keep it going beyond.
Yeah. Every night in Ramadan before iftar, there's going to be a halakha of some kind. So when you get out of class, you get out of work, you're going to have something that you can come and join us in. It's a learning opportunity. We do Monday and Thursday iftars here. After Ramadan, we'll do like iftars for the month of Shawwal, right? You should come and be in those things. And we'll give ideas and strategies on how you stay connected to some of these practices that you are able to do communally, right? So continue to be with us on Mondays. We'll go from like 7:15, we'll pray Isha, and 7:30 we'll start. We'll go to like 8:30, 9 o'clock or so. If you come at 6, great. If you come earlier, if you're able to, Maghrib's getting later. We do iftar here on Mondays, potluck. You should all come and join us if you can. So that we're getting to the habit of breaking fast also and fasting during the day. If you can't fast, you still come and eat with us. Do you know what I mean? But what's going to be great about our group being together is that when you come here for iftar, how many of you have ever been here to break fast before? Like during Ramadan? It's a lot of people, right? Do you know what I mean? And that can be overwhelming in and of itself. So you want to talk to each other so you have familiar faces. People you can look out for, you know, people that you've kind of journeyed with on preparations. And then in between, you set up times that you actualize some of this stuff, right? So we set up times for iftars here if you're trying to fast. But if you can't fast during the day or if it's too tough for you, like right now, and on a weekend it's a little easier to practice, you can say to me like, hey, Khalid, we're going to like get together for iftar on Saturday in Brooklyn. If anybody wants to join us, do you know? An open invite or something. Do you get what I mean? Does that make sense? Right? The religion is not something that's done individually, like unless you voluntarily do that. But it's not like better to just do everything on your own. If anything, leaning on people and having support. The Prophet had companions. Do you know what I mean? And when he was struggling, there was people who helped him to like get where he needed to be. He thinks he's lost his mind when he gets the first revelation. Khadija radiallahu ta'ala anha is there for him. When he goes on the night journey, the Isra and Miraj, right? For those not familiar, our tradition says the prophet goes to Jerusalem and he prays with every prophet in an amazing like moment of just solidarity and collegiality amongst all of the prophets of God. And then he's taken into the heavens, very vividly described. But then he also comes back home all on the same day. People start to doubt him and like mock him. You know, this journey that takes us a long time, you did in a night, and you also went into the heavens and came back. The prophet's friend, Abu Bakr, when they say, do you know what your friend wants us to believe? He wants us to believe he did this thing in one night. And he says without hesitation, if my friend has said it, then it must be true. And then he goes where the prophet's sitting, and every time he says something, he says, Sadaq, Sadaq, Sadaq. He's spoken the truth. He's spoken the truth. He's spoken the truth. He gives affirmation, right? Being alone is not like a bad thing. Solitude is helpful, but it's different than just being lonely, you know? So, like, lean on each other. Be each other's sisters and brothers. Like, invite one another. Help one another. Do you know what I mean? We're in this together. The last thing that I'll say before we take a pause, I don't want to go past nine, is we're going to talk about, like, intentions and objectives next week. So I'd like for you to formulate some of that in your mind. Bring a notebook if you can. A part of it for each of us this year, it has to be about much more than just us. There's a lot of people hurting in the world right now. There's a lot of people going through conflict, difficulty. You see what's happening in Palestine. You should know what's happening in Sudan, what's happening to people, the Uyghurs in China, Rohingya in Myanmar, what's happening in the Congo, what's happening in Kashmir, Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, Lebanon, across the board. What's happening in this country, right? School shootings have not stopped, even though headlines are focused on other things. Children are still like detained at borders. Healthcare still makes no sense, right? If wakefulness comes through the realities of atrocities that we should not let be in vain, the oppression that our brothers and sisters face who share not just faith but humanity with us, a part of your intention for this Ramadan has to be how you bring the best version of yourself to it so that your engagement of it also brings then the best version of yourself when you're standing for the sake of those that the world has forgotten. And power in our tradition is not equated to political power alone. But in our tradition, God is the source of all power. And spiritual power is a key source of power. It'll make it a lot easier to do a bunch of these things in preparation for Ramadan when your intentionality is rooted in knowing why you're doing it and who you do it for. And I could tell you, if I try to get up and run the way I run around every day just for me, I feel like sleeping most of the day. But I love my babies, I love my wife, I love my family, I love each of you, I love the community I serve. It gives me an energy that I didn't know I had until I was willing to embrace it. And when you can make it bigger than the self, that's not beyond including the self, right? I can love fully because I also love me. And it becomes hard to love others when you don't love yourself. Not in an egotistical way, right? But in a way that recognizes that it's okay to like love yourself. All of you, even the stuff that you don't like about yourself, you can still love yourself. You know what I mean? But you attach intentionality that isn't just about, I want this and I want that, but sees how you fit into something that's much bigger. This is where the spiritual aspect comes. We'll revisit this perhaps as an example, but there's a sheikh who tells his students, do you want to see the difference between a student of fiqh, a student of externals, and a student of the heart, a student of internals? And the students say yes. So he tells the students, they're sitting in a gathering, like we're sitting, when your classmate comes in and gives you salams, don't return the salams. And so in our tradition, one of the times a sunnah, a recommended act, outweighs in benefit a fard, an obligatory act, is the giving of salams. So you're not obligated to give salams, but you're obligated to respond to the salam. Somebody has to respond to that salam, right? So the student comes and says salams, and nobody says anything because the teacher said don't. And then a second time, he gives salams, and no one says anything. And then a third time again, assalamu alaikum, he's met with silence, and now he's angry. Don't you know it's obligatory on you to return my salams? Now the second student of the heart, the sheikh says, do the same thing. He enters, gives salams, no one responds. The second time, again, silence. And the third time, he's met with silence, distinct from his classmate who got enraged. Don't you know it's fard to return my salams? The student of the heart says to his peers, did I do something to offend you that you're not returning my greeting? But he finds himself as part of the situation. Do you get what I mean? Spirituality at its pinnacle sees how we are connected to what happens over there. Does that make sense? And Ramadan is the month where we said the hadith, Futihat abwab al-jannah, the gates of heaven are open, Ghuligat abwab al-nar, the gates of Jahannam are closed, Sufidat al-shayateen, the shayateen, they're chained. It's just barakah, blessing, increase, mercy, compassion, forgiveness. So these are all spiritual exercises that we had written here before. From Tarawih, Suhoor, all your prayers, they are what transforms your inward, that brings you to just moments. And that's what it is. God creates moments for us that are moving. The moment I held my daughter when my wife delivered her, I will never forget it. Some of you will never forget when you stood in front of the Kaaba for the first time and made dua. You're not going to forget what it felt like to feel the breezes of Medina against your face. There are moments, but your heart had to be ready to receive the moment, right? That's what we're doing. We're consciously creating moments that what I'm saying in the intention is also about how does it then impact what other people are going through. Does that make sense? So let's take a pause here. Next week, bring a book, a notebook with you so we can reflect in it. We'll start, if you can come at 6, great. If you can come at Maghrib, break fast with us. Otherwise, we'll see everyone around 7:15, 7:30 next Monday, inshallah. All right. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.